Well, first off, for some reason, maybe because I'm stupid, I will mess up like a year or someone's name on almost every show. I did pretty well on last week's show. I think my only error was I called Madeline Stowe, who I love, Madeline Snow. Not a huge error, but sorry about that. Let's see if I can get through an entire episode without making any mistakes. Speaking of Ayn Rand, just kidding. Now, we all know dating sucks these days. It's hard to meet people. Online dating is just a lot of spam, scams, and just kind of a waste of time. And I read a funny quote in the paper. It was talking about people in their 40s looking for partners, and a woman had a funny quote. She said, "Clearly the dating pool has pee in it." Very well said. And speaking of spam, it used to be like largely email-based, but now I get crap on my phone sometimes, like a clearly fake text poorly written about some credit card bill or something about a purchase that is obviously bullshit. And I'm like, guys, you got to do better than that. And there's a weird kind of spooky text that I get once in a while, like a girl from a random number will be like, "Hi, is this Jessica or something?" And I'll respond and be like, "No, sorry, wrong number." And then the person will be like, "How are you doing? You seem nice." And then I'm just like, don't text again. I'm not an idiot. Go try and fool someone else. And shame on that. The whole industry of like spammers who prey on the lonely, the elderly. So many have fallen prey to their bullshit, lost a bunch of money and whatnot. It's morally disgusting to take advantage of people like that. And I wish all the scammers and spammers a slow, painful demise. And speaking of disturbing behavior, I watched the pretty fun, silly thriller Disturbing Behavior the other day. It's from 1998, skillfully directed by David Nutter. It's got James Marsden, Katie Holmes, Nick Stahl, Bruce Greenwood as the evil doctor, and the interesting William Sadler as a janitor who's not as dumb as he looks. William Sadler has been in a million movies. You know him from 1999's The Green Mile, or the kind of awesome The Mist from 2007, the horror adaptation of the Stephen King novella. Interestingly, both of those movies were directed by Frank Darabont. And briefly, I gotta bring this up. On the British version of The Wheel of Fortune, the category was star and role, and the puzzle was almost completed. The board had T, and then a missing letter, M, Hanks, The Green, M, missing letter, L-E. Pretty easy, right? And the fucking lady tried to solve it, and she said, "Tom Hanks, The Green Mole." And the audience was just like, what the fuck? And I laugh every time I see the damn thing. There was another kind of funny one. Almost the entire phrase was revealed. It had grilled, A-L, missing letter, A-C-O-R-E, tuna. And the goddamn person asked for an F. Grilled Alpha Core tuna? Never seen that. But anyway, funny story. William Sadler is good friends with the acting teacher I had in Los Angeles. And I remember one night in class, I wasn't feeling great, probably depressed, and I was having a hard time smiling in a scene. And the teacher said, "Mark, sometimes you remind me of something my friend William Sadler has, which is the male equivalent of resting bitch face." That probably made me laugh, but I get it. My face can sometimes be in a somewhat tortured scowl. I'm usually thinking about something or ruminating, or sometimes I'm just annoyed, to be honest. Albert Einstein kind of nailed it when he said, "Two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity." And I am not yet completely sure about the universe. Nice one, Einstein. And of course, Einstein was the name of Dr. Emmett Brown's pet sheepdog from 1985's Back to the Future. The doctor was played by Christopher Lloyd, and the dog was played by a dog named Tiger. That was the actual dog's name. Hey, if you're ever in Pasadena, go see Doc Brown's house. It's a historic craftsman called the Gamble House, and you can visit it. Okay, back to the movie Disturbing Behavior. Dude, I loved it. It's cheesy, well-acted, just completely fun. It's like under 90 minutes, and I think the DVD has a bunch of deleted scenes. The studio supposedly cut like 30 minutes from it, and I think the studio blocked the release of the director's cut, but it seems like almost all of the deleted scenes are on the special feature DVD. James Marsden and his parents move to this town of Cradle Bay, and he soon realizes there's some weird shit going on with some of his classmates. There's a clique known as the Blue Ribbons, and they're like presumably these perfect, super intelligent, but also somewhat evil kids at times. Nick Stahl is like a paranoid rebel at the high school who suddenly is transformed into one of these Blue Ribbons. So James Marsden and his high school crush, Katie Holmes, start to investigate what's going on. It involves some crazy medical experiments where the doctor, played by Bruce Greenwood, is medically brainwashing students, inserting microchips in their heads. There's a funny line where the doctor's about to perform the experiment on James Marsden, and the doctor says, "Adolescence is a minefield, but soon you'll be able to walk right through it." And I'm telling you, this is a seriously fun little movie with some great scares, and it's got a great energy. And near to my heart, there's a scene in a psychiatric hospital that James Marsden and Katie Holmes break into, and the kind of catchy as hell song Flagpole Sitta by the band Harvey Danger is playing. Totally 90s, totally fun song. Here's a little bit of that. "Put me in the hospital for nerves, then they had to commit me. You told them all I was crazy. They cut off my legs, now I'm an amputee. God damn you, I'm not sick, but I'm not well. And I'm so hot, 'cause I'm in hell. I'm not sick, but I'm not well. And it's a sin to live so well." And I have to mention the actor Chad Danella, who plays the character UV, who is like the biggest stoner on the planet. The actor is hilarious. He acts like completely baked. He kind of reminded me of the character Marty from 2012's Cabin in the Woods, who was an absolute pothead, amazingly acted by Fran Kranz. I still crack up at the part in the beginning where he's parking his car and he's smoking from like a massive bong that he then collapses and it looks like a normal kind of coffee thermos. But there's a hilarious scene in the end of Disturbing Behavior where the stoner guy is picking up James Marsden and Katie Holmes and he's not sure if they've been brainwashed or not. And so the stoner asks James Marsden, "What's the capital of North Dakota?" And James Marsden says, "How the fuck should I know?" And the stoner then says in the most stonery way, "Okay, you're cool." So yeah, check out the movie. I swear it's a stupid fun time. And briefly, to shut the door on Disturbing Behavior, the husband I mentioned in France that had been raping his wife for years basically admitted in court about his sins. And I guess his father was also a slime ball who had sexually abused a young girl. But that's the thing, man. You don't have to follow your parents' lead. If they were terrible people, you can show them that you're better than that. And the husband reportedly said, "I'm just ashamed of my father. In the end, I didn't do any better." And that's a shameful statement. You could have been a good person. Instead, you fucking blew it. Okay, let's talk about turning a new leaf, at least for the time being. The silliness of coffee orders and some movies and whatnot.
You are my density. You are my density.
And speaking of a new leaf, well, check out Elaine May's A New Leaf from 1971, a pretty fun, pretty dark romantic comedy with Walter Matthau and Elaine May, which was written and directed by Elaine May in an impressive directorial debut. Walter Matthau is an extravagant playboy who runs out of money from his inheritance, so he plans to marry a wealthy scientist played by Elaine May and then murder her. There's a funny line at the beginning. Walter Matthau is having his car worked on, and he says, "I have to take it in 2 or 3 times a week, which is sometimes inconvenient." The mechanic then asks how often he drives it, and he says, 2 or 3 times a week. I take it in every time I drive. Then it usually needs a tune-up every few weeks, so I actually don't get to drive it very much. But it is a classic black comedy. Walter Matthau's always great. There's some funny scenes with him, and Elaine May is a serious talent. Anyway, back to My New Leaf. You know, I've started changing my ways a little bit. I decided to stop the drinking for a little bit. Nothing crazy. I mean, I'm still going to drink, but the whole routine was getting tiresome. Like, I was feeling like I had to drink rather than I wanted to drink. And on some of my days off, I would be kind of drunkish at like 4 p.m. And I finally was just like, dude, get your shit together. So yeah, I'm going to keep it up for a bit. No more goddamn vaping. That's done for sure. I'm laying off the THC drinks as well. And I'm also going to church. Okay, just kidding on that last one. But, you know, I'm trying to have a more positive outlook. And it does kind of feel like things are starting to change for the better for me a little bit. I just feel like good things are going to happen. Nothing on the romance front. That's still a wasteland, but I still remain hopeful. And yes, I'm going to drink again, but it will be more of me making the choice. It was getting to the point where alcohol was making the decision for me. And that's not good. And this is kind of weird, but my horoscope from today says, your energy levels will soar this weekend, and something you have been struggling with will come easy to you at last. It's those struggles that will make your eventual triumph all the more enjoyable, because you had to work so hard for it. It's like, okay, I'm on board with that. But you know, I'll never stop drinking coffee. And people with their silly ass customized coffee orders is just getting out of hand. Fucking venti iced Americano with almond milk, toffee nut, extra hot caramel drizzle. It's like, just stop it. Order a fucking drink with one or two things and then get the fuck out of here. Again, an interesting coffee order doesn't make you interesting. It makes you a pain in the ass. I get black coffee. Sometimes I'll get a cortado, which is espresso and milk in a one-to-one ratio, and cortado translates to cut. And get this, there's at least 170,000 different ways to customize a Starbucks drink. I mean, is that really necessary, America? And you know, for some of the really ridiculous drinks, the barista probably secretly spits in it or puts his finger or dick in it. Well, maybe not if it's a hot drink, but you know what I mean. One of those rules is like, don't be an unnecessary pain in the ass to waiters or baristas or people like that. And whenever I go to dinner with someone and they're kind of demanding or high maintenance with the waiter, I'm always thinking to myself, look, man, I'm being cool here. Yes, fuck with her food. She deserves it. But don't fuck with mine, okay? I'm a nice guy. Speaking of coffee, my dad loved the most sugary-ass coffee with milk or cream. I did, too, when I was growing up, but I eventually shook the sugar habit. As the Beastie Boys sang in their song Intergalactic from the 1998 album Hello Nasty, I lack my sugar with coffee and cream. And my dad would, like, drink coffee at, like, 2 a.m. and shit. He was hardcore. I was watching TV the other day and I saw Tom Selleck on some kind of low budget looking financial services commercial. And it's like, do you really need money that badly, Tom? I mean, what in the hell is the point? It's a bad look. I've seen like an old ass Morgan Freeman on some dumbass commercial. I'm like, Morgan, baby, you got the dough. Why debase yourself? And speaking of debasing, I love the classic Pixies song Debaser from the utterly classic album from 1989, Doolittle. The lyrics kind of reference the 1929 short film Un Chien Andalou by Louis Buñuel and Salvador Dali, a disturbing, surrealistic little film with the unforgettable image of a woman getting her eyeball sliced. It's actually a goat eyeball, don't worry. But it's a shocking and unforgettable image. I remember I saw it in film school, and Un Chien Andalou translates to an Andalusian dog. Want to grow up to be a debaser, 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 debaser. That's a terrible version. Go check out the real song. So looping back to the Philip K. Dick episode, and if you haven't seen the excellent time travel movie Looper from 2012, directed by Rian Johnson with Bruce Willis, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Emily Blunt, Christ, watch it immediately. A hitman's future self is sent back in time to kill his younger self. But yeah, speaking of Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, I watched the kind of excellent animated film called Robot Dreams. It's set in 1980s New York City. It's got music and sounds, but no words are really spoken. It focuses on a lonely dog who mail orders a robot companion. The dog assembles him, and soon they become friends. There's a nice reference to the classic 1939's The Wizard of Oz, which had another one of those absolutely scarring memories from my childhood with those frightening fucking flying monkeys. Holy shit. And it's also got a very fun, silly dance sequence between the dog and the robot set to the amazing Earth, Wind, and Fire song, September. There's a mishap while they're visiting the beach, and the robot malfunctions, and the dog is unable to rescue him. But while the robot is stranded, he does have dreams of his buddy dog. There is a sadness to the movie, and there's a great scene where the paralyzed robot is lying on the beach, and he assists like a baby bird to fly by mimicking the flapping of wings with his mouth. It's very sweet, very clever. Eventually, the dog finds another robot friend, and our hero robot is picked up and fixed by someone else. So the robot and the dog end up happy, more or less, but they still have these deep, fond memories of each other. We all have those friendships that were so special, and they eventually ended, or people moved on, or whatever. But it's a touching movie. It's a little overlong, and I was definitely expecting and preparing to cry in the end. But I didn't. But I was moved by it, and I recommend it. And let's speak a little bit about loneliness, why don't we? In this movie, the dog is like a lot of us, kind of isolated, surrounded by people, yet still lonely. And I think we are closely approaching the time, or have we already, where technology will begin to replace interactions with humans. I mean, it's always been hard to meet people, but with all the distractions and superficiality of this modern age, it's gotten really difficult. The more connected we are with technology, the less connected we are with each other. And quickly, back on robots, Mr. Dumbshit himself, Elon Musk, predicted that more than 1,000 humanoid robots would be working at Tesla, like within a year or two. And he thinks ultimately the number of humanoid robots will far exceed the population of humans on Earth. Now, does that sound appealing to you guys? And I will bet you even robots can't be programmed to find Elon Musk's jokes to be funny. He recently made some dumb shit comment about something, and he posted it online and later deleted it. He was quoted as saying, "Well, one lesson I've learned is just because I say something to a group and they laugh doesn't mean it's going to be all that hilarious as a post on X." And you know why people tolerate you and laugh at your jokes, Elon? Because you're powerful and you're rich, and I guess you intimidate some people and they're actually afraid to contradict you in any way. I really couldn't give two shits about Elon Musk. He doesn't impress me or intimidate me. Yes, he's doing some good things for sure, and he can be brilliant, but as a person, he's completely tone-deaf, unfunny, ostentatious, self-satisfied, and just a smug asshole. He's a bit of a bully, and as I've said before, he has zero real wit or concept of how comedy works. Okay, back to loneliness. I read an article about loneliness that mentioned the book A Biography of Loneliness by Bound Alberti. Bound. What a wild first name. But there's a graph in it depicting occurrences of the word loneliness in a database of English language works printed between 1550 and 2000. And from like 1550 to 1800, the line hovers between 0 and 0.0001%. Then around the 1820s, the line on the graph representing, you know, the occurrences of the word loneliness charges way upward. And the world obviously was changing fast at that time. Wars, communities disintegrating, people moving out of small towns into vast anonymous cities, like our lonely dog in New York City in the movie Robot Dreams. And most recently, of course, with COVID, Jesus, a lot of people have just come out of that seclusion and isolation a bit damaged, less able to make eye contact or even have ordinary conversations. Some philosopher in the article from Harvard was quoted as saying, "The interactions that make us less lonely come naturally to us, but they still need to be practiced or our skills atrophy." And also with COVID came more of the rise of like this frictionless forms of interaction, you know, self-checkout displays, meal delivery apps, which this philosopher labeled as cocooning, or retreating into the digital world. And this digital world provides everything you need except the thing we need the most, which is meaningful connection. And I had read another quote a while back where someone mentioned school cafeterias being so quiet these days because everyone was looking at their phones. And I mean, in high school and junior high, man, the cafeteria was the place to talk, to bullshit, to have fun, to be a kid, you know? But anyway, this article on loneliness was an amazing article, and a lot of that was lifted verbatim from it, so all credit to those sources. It's so easy these days to rush home, close our doors, and retreat to our inner world, and it can be tough to force ourselves to get out of our comfort zone, to get out of our apartments, to go to a museum, to go to a play, to ask someone out on a date. But what's the point otherwise? Life should be unpredictable. Take some chances. Change things up. I read a quote recently from some French dude that said, "Chaos makes me younger." And I think there's some truth to that. Like, try some weird shit. Do some random things. I mean, I prefer anxiety to boredom, to be honest. And I read an article about something I never really thought about before, is how gross those little bins are at the airport that everyone's putting their shoes and bags and whatever random shit in there. A study in 2018 said the bins had more cold germs than airport toilets. So wash your hands after touching those fuckers. And speaking of bathrooms, I hate when guys are in the restroom pissing or whatever, and then they don't wash their hands afterwards. It's like, dude, show some respect for others, you dirty son of a bitch. But again, men can just be disgusting at times. What can we do? And I've said recently, our world has largely shifted into a place where style reigns over substance, computers reign over conversation, and dickheadedness, is that a word, reigns over decency. And check out this segue. Speaking of a stylish substance, I went and saw the new movie The Substance with Demi Moore, Margaret Qualley, and Dennis Quaid. It's directed by Coralie Fargeau. She also did the enjoyable female revenge flick appropriately titled Revenge from 2017. A woman is raped and left for dead, and she recovers and unleashes bloody hell on them. I love those types of movies. And I went in wanting to love The Substance, and you know, I did like it a lot. But there were a couple flaws, I thought, though the last 45 minutes or so are absolutely epic. Demi Moore plays a beautiful but aging starlet who Hollywood decides is too old and needs a replacement. The executive is played by a very slimy, slightly too over-the-top for my taste, Dennis Quaid. Demi Moore has this kind of old-school aerobics TV show, and she is unceremoniously fired, and it kind of shatters her world. She comes across an ad for the Substance, a product that will create a younger, more beautiful version of yourself. You will still exist, but there's also this enhanced, beautiful version that will also exist. And she is played in the movie by Margaret Qualley, daughter of Andy McDowell, by the way. And as with all experimental medications, there are some rules and downsides. The current version of yourself will be given 1 week, and then the younger version takes over for a week, and then the cycle repeats. There's some maintenance. Each version of yourself has to feed the other with injections, and there's kind of a strict 7-day-only policy. On the end of that 7th day, the younger or older version has to take over. And of course, the younger version becomes enthralled with her beauty, and she starts abusing the system. She's become very successful, so she starts to keep Demi Moore in her kind of comatose state for longer than 7 days at times. And that's when shit just starts going haywire. And the Demi Moore character does have the ability to stop the experiment at any time, but she kind of waits too long. It's a pretty devastating look at the dark side of the beauty obsession, the ugliness of Hollywood, and as they say, Hollywood eats its young, and particularly the harshness of being an aging female in the business. If you keep chasing your tail trying to stay youthful, eventually it catches up with you. Fame is fleeting, beauty is fleeting, and man, it's all a crapshoot, largely based on luck, timing, who you know, and other bullshit. As Lauren Bacall once wisely said, stardom isn't a profession, it's an accident. And morality and Hollywood are polar opposites. But anyway, the ending of the film, or maybe like the last 45 minutes or so, are utterly gonzo, over-the-top madness, and that's where I was like all into this movie. The final couple minutes have such a tragic feel to them. It's like David Lynch, but more so it's like extreme David Cronenberg body horror stuff. Actually, a lot of the film is completely David Cronenberg-ish. But yeah, I mean, check it out. It's too long. I honestly think at least 20 minutes could have been cut out and it would be a better film. There was like way too many fucking scenes of Margaret Qualley dancing. Yes, she's cute. We get it. And the ending freak out at the Academy Awards is appropriately extreme, but could have easily been like probably 5 minutes shorter. And there's so many shots of female asses bouncing and twerking. Yes, we get it. I like female butts too, but enough already. And speaking of hot asses, yes, it happened again. Midway through this movie, I guess I moved around in my seat in the theater, and I turned on the little ass heater. I didn't even know they had one in the theater seats, but I quickly turned it off. And I never, like, adjust my seat so my legs can rest or put my chair up or any of that shit in the theater. I sit like a normal person, like in a normal theater. I don't need my feet up. Jesus, what am I in, like a skilled nursing facility or something? Which is referred to as a sniff in hospital slang. But anyway, I did find the script lacking in one major way. The Demi Moore character, like, doesn't experience any of the benefits of her younger self's success. It's like when one of the versions are living their week, the other one is basically just shut down in, like, a comatose state. And I think it would have been way more affecting if, like, part of Demi Moore's mind was able to exist in the younger character. And then you could kind of have, like, the two different minds battling it out in the same body. I mean, there was like zero benefit for the older Demi Moore character to the whole experiment. She's out of commission for a week. The young version is living it up, being successful. And then the young version is out of commission for a week. And then the Demi Moore character basically is back in the same situation before the whole damn experiment started. So I didn't really care about the characters, to be honest, for most of the movie. But again, the last like maybe third of the movie is so extreme. And you just got to see it. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong in my viewpoint of the movie, but friends, I'm rarely wrong. Just kidding, of course. But Demi Moore does get amazing in that last like half or whatever when she just starts getting pissed off and starts losing it. It's like a ferocious performance. And, you know, I saw it yesterday and something about The Substance is sticking with me, let me tell you. It's completely worth watching and it will affect you, I think, and you may fucking love it. And we all age, of course, but we can do it with some class, you know. I mean, let's remain genuine to ourselves. Okay, get a little Botox or something or other, but don't look ridiculous. And yes, I look at myself sometimes in a mirror and I'm like, holy shit, you've gotten older, pal. But there's also kind of a weird sense of pride I have. It's like, man, you've made it this far. You're a little weathered. You've been through some shit, but you've kept it up and you keep on going. As George Orwell said, at 50, everyone gets the face he deserves. So yeah, maybe in a few years I will look into that Substance product. I'm sure me and my younger self would be able to handle it perfectly fine. So anyway, it's time to say goodbye. So let's mention Saying Goodbye, which is a sweet little catchy-ass song from the still fun to watch The Muppets Take Manhattan from 1984, directed by the man himself, Frank Oz. Here's a little bit of that song. Saying goodbye, going away, seems like goodbye's such a hard thing to say. Touching a hand, wondering why, it's time for saying goodbye. So until next week, this is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.